And our special guest tonight, Dr. Martin Blank, we're talking about his work, Overpowered, what science tells us about the dangers of cell phones and other Wi-Fi age devices. We'll be back. We'll take your calls with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. Martin Blank with us. Martin, I guess we were talking about the youngsters and the kids, and the one good saving grace out of any of this is they don't talk on the phone a lot. They're using those smartphones all the time, but at least they're texting away, huh?
Yep, I believe that certainly minimizes the kind of exposure. They have it in their hands, but it's the head that one tries to avoid because that's where the problems are.
A lot of people will charge their smartphones at night, and the phone's pretty close to them. Not a good idea?
Terrible idea. I think the thing is you want to keep that thing, first of all, you want to keep it off. If you're charging it, have it away from you. Don't have it because the whole charging process, you don't know what fields are being generated there
right
around you. And the thing is that many kids, by the way, sleep with this under their, they use it as an alarm clock. They put it under their pillow.
Well, that's a good point.
You're terrible, right. Terrible. They should, first of all, they shouldn't have it near them, and second of all, they should shut it off. That's one point that I should emphasize. There are many people who have Wi-Fi. It's very convenient. I don't have Wi-Fi. I got a lot of cables hanging around, and that's a pain. But the thing is that I'll pay that price because I don't want Wi-Fi everywhere. That's one of the bad things about Wi-Fi. It's just everywhere. But people should shut it off at night when they're not using it. There's no reason for it to be on. When it's all, when they're not using it, they can shut it off. When they need it, they turn it on. And that's the something that's easy enough to do, and it certainly will minimize the kind of exposure. The less you get, the better.
If we could see the frequencies for one moment, if we could see them outside, what would they look like? I mean, would they be like shooting all over the place?
I really don't know how to visualize it. Except, I mean, we see it when we talk about it and write papers about it. You see them; they show a bunch of sine waves. It's like the surface of an ocean, the waves. Except that they're usually sine waves when the normal signals are not smooth like that, but they have a lot of jagged things. So, like when you look at an EKG, I mean, when you ever take a record. That has a regular pattern. You get the pattern when the atria, the upper chambers of the heart contract, and then that's followed by the ventricular contractions. That's where the real pumping occurs, and so you get a kind of an atrial signal, and then you get that fancy ventricular signal, the so-called QRS wave that comes there. It's like an up and down and up and down, and they're spaced regularly. So you get that was called a P wave and then a QRST complex. So people, that's a special kind of wave that you get with the functioning of the heart. With an EEG, electroencephalogram, you get all kinds of patterns on there because the brain is firing in different places, all, you know, more, not simultaneously, but it seems that way. It's all over the place and lots of little spikes that are occurring, as they call them. So that's, I would say, it's just the way we make we visualize it that way. What's happening is that there's energy in the atmosphere, and the energy is able to move charges. So the charges that are sitting in our bodies in the form of the atoms or the loose electrons that we have around, they can be moved. Just like these, these graphs indicate, and they do move. I mean, when you get these electromagnetic waves interacting with DNA, they cause the electrons that are within the DNA structure. You know, the DNA is supposed to be a double helix.
That's right. Yeah.
Two long chains that are kind of twisted, and along the center of these things, they've got electrons. Because the electrons are part of the structure of the bases. The bases between these two chains carry the genetic information. There are four different bases, and the order in which they come tells the body how to make different proteins. The code is that you take four of these bases, and they will define a particular protein component, an amino acid. And they're different ones for different amino acids. So the sequence of these codes tells the structure there, the ribosome where this process takes place, it tells them which proteins to add in sequence. And so you build up a chain of proteins. And the proteins are what make our body work. I mean, you need like digestive enzymes. You've got to make these things because they're needed for breaking apart food. We're constantly making stuff with the DNA. You know, when I was when I first started learning science, I guess in public school, you got the idea that the stuff of heredity was there to procreate. In other words, the parents gave that to the children.
Then
the children got it, and that was it. That was them. They were there.
Not anymore.
That stuff is active all the time. Cells are using that information. They need that information to make the proteins that must do our work of the living cell, so that the DNA is constantly doing stuff in there. And when it does this stuff, it is moving chemicals around. And you can understand that if there's a strong electrical force out there that suddenly is there and shouldn't be there, it's going to, you know, move things in the wrong direction. You know, it's going to pull it when it shouldn't be pulled, that kind of thing. So it's easy to understand how things can go awry. The body is remarkably good as a machine for taking the code and taking the different components, the amino acids, and putting them together. The error rate is very, very small. But you can see how when you have these extraneous electric signals in there, they can be pulling something at the wrong time and get it out of sequence, and then you get a mistake. That's an error in the structure. And if you get enough of them, they can't be repaired. And if they can't be repaired, it's called a mutation. And the mutation is carried on and is believed to be the first step in forming a cancer. So you can see how the error rate might be enhanced by the action of these electromagnetic fields that are around, and how this can lead to the kind of diseases that we're worried about now. We don't make the connection. Just like we don't see the EMF, we don't make the connection between any damage that may occur from this kind of exposure and the tumor that shows up, let's say, 5 to 10 years later. 10 is a kind of a small, you know, there's some tumors. Some cancers don't take very long. Leukemia in children peaks at about 3 to 4 years. But something like gliomas, which are brain tumors, they take about 10 years,
they
10 to
take
20
a while.
Years.
That's right.
And it's not the same for everybody. So that it's hard to make the connection. I think you just have to believe that this stuff is no good for you and try and avoid it. Now, there's some things that are no good for you that you can't avoid. I mean, getting in a car crash is not good for you. But the fact is that you drive, but you take precautions. You stay within the lanes. You stay within the speed limit. You use seat belts. I mean, these are kinds of precautions that we've learned over the years we have to do to minimize the kind of damage that can occur from these conveniences we've developed. But we haven't developed that kind of mentality for dealing with these devices because, first of all, we don't see the danger. And second of all, they're fun. You don't think of them as fun. I mean,
that's right. You think they're very harmless.
Yep. Yep. They're your friends.
Let's take some calls here for you.
Sure.
Dr. Martin Blank with us. Let's go to Chris in Ohio to get things started. Chris, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us.
Okay. Thank you so much for your venue, Mr. Norrie.
Sure thing.
And Mr. Blank, I appreciate your work. I was wondering if you're familiar with about the study they did on the honeybees. I happened to see it on a documentary called Resonance Double Dot, A Being of Frequency. They have it on Amazon.com, and I think I might have seen it on Hulu also. But what it mentions is they did a study where they had, like, I think it was about 8 beehives. And, of course, since the bee has got magnetite in it, it has a homing device to get it back to its hive. And what they did is they took just not the regular cell phones, but the ones that we have, like the old fashion ones where you put the base and you got the phone that you have just in your house, those kind of wireless ones.
That's right.
They took half of them, put those in it, And they found, and even it's a lot less frequency and put out frequencies than your cell phones. And they found the bees could not find their way back to the hive.
Oh, boy.
And now we're putting out more and more these big towers. And, of course, they're upping the wattage on them for the newer phones that are a lot more higher power. And that could be probably why we're losing a lot of our honeybees. And it could be the point where it continues. We'll be in deep doo-doo.
Yep, you're absolutely right. The thing is that a lot of people have looked for causes, and that's certainly one. While people have put a lot of emphasis on mites that attack honeybees, and they think that this is kind of an infection that occurs with them. But I remember years ago when I was first getting into this business, and I was meeting people and finding out some of the different things they did. I went with a professor from Caltech, a guy called Kirschling, who was doing research on honeybees and the magnetite that's in them. And he gave a demonstration where he was watching a swarm, I'd call them, but I don't know, it was a whole bunch of bees that were headed back to a hive. And then he had a generator, I forget what signal he used there, but he turned it on, and then suddenly the bees changed. And it was kind of amazing. It was like a traffic cop there. This signal went out, and the bees changed, and instead of going towards the hive, they moved in the other direction. So he found, and they've described this now, that the bees have this magnetite, and that it is a very strong determinant of the, you know, they react to it. It can determine which way they're going to go. So I think that they know that this is a component of the bee problem, and they've got to do something about it. But it's not only bees, and it's not only the fields. The towers themselves are a problem. The Department of the Interior was very worried about the ability of these towers that are coming up now to interfere with bird migration and to cause damage to birds when they're migrating. Many of them move at night, and I don't know if they don't see. They must see something. But the fact is that when they're flying, they generally don't look. They have some system where they're guided, and they fly as a flock. And they sometimes just go in and hit the towers. This was first noticed when they put up power towers and then also the transmission towers for radio transmission.
They smack right into them.
Right. They have tremendous bird kills, especially when the migrations occur. And usually it's on the southward migration in our hemisphere, because that's when they're really, you know, they kind of all poop from the work, you know, their work cycles, rather than when they're coming up from the south and they're rejuvenated and they have a lot of young ones there that with a lot of energy. So the kill rate is not quite as bad. But on the way down, there's an enormous loss, especially at night when the vision is impaired. So it's a physical problem also. In other words, that they hit these towers and they're damaged. And the signal, the hidden signal that nobody can see easily, but it interferes with their navigation as well. So it's a real problem.
Well, you know, the body's an amazing thing, but there's only so much it can take.
Yep.
Let's go to Chuck in Indianapolis, east of the Rockies. Chuck, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Martin. It's about time someone come up with this. I dealt with microwave since before they had microwave ovens. I was an ECM man in the service. I used it, had no idea how far the signal would go. And we first found out that it would cook an egg from the inside to the outside. And that's when I decided, wow, this is dangerous.
Yep.
And people, I will not have a microwave oven with the door open or with the insulation deteriorating, because it'll get you in your kitchen. And when you're in your automobile with a phone and that microwave signal's coming in, it's cooking you and everybody else and everything else in that automobile. It's just like an oven, that frequency. They have no idea how far it'll travel with these antennas that they put up in the late 70s and 80s throughout the United States and Canada. It's getting everybody. I won't have a microwave.
You may be one of the smart people here. In terms of a microwave oven, Martin, I guess it's not too wise to turn it on and stand in front of it, is it?
Nope, it's not. I think the you're advised to stay at least 3 feet away from it. And or actually, it's best if you set it up. It doesn't take very long, so you go out of the kitchen when it's on. There's no need to stand around and watch it. But the one thing that people don't realize generally is that when they worry about the microwave that's doing the cooking, which is in the chamber itself, but there's a power pack that is setting up the microwave frequencies for cooking, but the power pack also emits, and it emits power frequency radiation, and that can be very high. It's very low energy compared to the microwave. It doesn't cook you. But that's the kind of damage that, for example, was implicated in the childhood leukemia studies. So, or that I mentioned earlier this hour, the one about the Alzheimer's study that was done in Switzerland. I mean, that's the level of a low power that can cause damage. So you really ought to stay away not only from the hot stuff that's doing the cooking in the microwave, but from the side of it where they usually have the power pack that's generating the energy the electrical energy to drive the process.
Martin, some people feel lethargic when they wake up in the morning. They just don't seem to have the energy they think they should have. Might this be part of that?
You mean the electromagnetic field?
Yeah, getting bombarded makes them weaker or something?
I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't know. I mean, that we have so many influences now on our life that are unnatural. In other words, we weren't born, or we didn't evolve in an environment that had these in there. People think about the chemicals that we have in our house. For example, you open up your kitchen cabinet, and you find these chemicals for cleaning and for polishing.
Oh yeah, they're everywhere.
And these things are, you know, they're not natural. Let's put it that way. Our body is not meant to have these, to be exposed to these. Somebody did a study a little while ago where they analyzed the blood in the placenta in a newborn child, what's left, and they found 200 or thereabouts chemicals that are unnatural. In other words, that are industrial products that have come into our lives. And this is in a newborn child.
Brand new baby. Carried on from mother. Martin, hold on. We're going to take this break, and we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you with Dr. Martin Blank, author of Overpowered. Yikes. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Beyond Belief, that's our television program, and you can watch it free for 10 days. Take advantage of that and look at all the other videos that are available. Just take some time over the couple days and just watch as much as you want. Beyond Belief. Simply get to that website by going to www.beyondbelief.com. And welcome back, Dr. Martin Blank with us. Martin, you ought to win a Nobel Prize for this one day.
Well, actually, this is kind of the standard kind of biological research. We've got some interesting results, and in many ways groundbreaking, but this is the kind of stuff that people are working away. They're trying. A lot of people doing these kinds of things, that they don't get the kind of publicity. I think we happen to hit on a problem that's gotten into the area of, controversy and cell phones, explosion, interest in all that kind of stuff. We're fortunate in that respect. But it's standard biological research. More of it should be done. More of it should be supported. That's the one always has to sell the stuff. That's the thing about biological research. When I got into this particular problem, it was just, you know, to find an answer to something. It just, you know, I told you at the very beginning that we never thought about this. When I heard it, I didn't know whether to believe it or not. And so I had to show it to myself. And when I did, it suddenly opened up a whole new avenue of looking at things. And I think a lot of science is that way. You suddenly decide, you know, you find something you don't understand. You look at it and start figuring it out. In many ways, it's like a kid grown up. That's what kids do. They pick things up and they want to find out how they work. So they start picking away, taking it apart to see the parts and so on. It's one of the nice things about science. It's kind of like the way to feed natural curiosity, only it's in a technical way now. And now we got a lot of good tools to help us along this way. People are now taking apart DNA and they're finding out that people have put together a chromosome. Years ago, that would have been, people would have been science fiction. And now it's reality. And I think it becomes reality when you support people to do this kind of stuff. You allow them. You give them not just anybody helter-skelter, but you allow a disciplined doing of this kind of thing. It's very important. It's very important for the development of society. It's very important for the development of individuals. And it's important to have a society that has this outlook, because it's one that you help improve things. Well, too much preaching, I guess.
Not at all. Let's go back to the phones, though, for you. Let's go to Christian in Calabasas, California. Christian, go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. Mr. Blank, is it?
Yep.
That's Mr. Blank.
Yeah.
Mr. Blank. Oh, okay. I wanted to tell you back when I was working a security job, my job was actually to sit there and watch the power plants that were distributing about, I think, 480 kV. It was one of the highest rating of the electrical currents. And my car, I'd be underneath them, and my car would have like a little bit of a electrical shock to it when I touched the door to crawl in the car or get out of the car and check the facility. And I would always notice like a little bit of a weird feeling of being in that force field there. I knew it was definitely disrupting a lot of the cells in the body, but hey, it's a job. You can't really say, no, I'm not going to go sit there. But I had actually mentioned to some of the technicians that worked at the site and tried to come up with an idea that maybe they might be able to transport the electricity through water, which I heard water was a zero ohms conductor. It's more conducting than it would be regular copper.
What you're saying is not true, but.
Oh, okay.
Water can conduct very, very, very little current. When you have salts dissolved in it, they will conduct current. When you have a battery, the fluid in there has an electrolyte. It has salts in there so that it can conduct the current between the different electrodes, the anode and the cathode.
Sir, can I ask you one real quick thing?
Sure.
I want to get this out there because maybe it would be an idea for the future. I thought of maybe they could build a system that would be surrounding circumference of the lines that might extract that energy and put it back into the system somehow, so that way it's not creating a area of that magnetic interference area where they would build like a tunnel or something to house that energy so it wouldn't create more harm in the surrounding areas of electrical lines and stuff.
Like a vacuum that would suck all this stuff in. I don't know if that's possible, Martin.
Well, the thing about electromagnetic energy is that it's not the same thing like, you take a hammer and you can transmit the energy when you hit the head of the hammer onto the nail head. That's mechanical energy you can transfer. The electromagnetic energy that comes from a place like the sun travels through nothing. It travels through a vacuum. So it's maybe hard to understand, but that's the nature of things. The light we see when we look up in the sky and look at the stars, we see light, but that light is coming from far away and traveling through virtually nothing. It's traveling through a vacuum. So that's the thing that you have to understand about the electromagnetic fields, that they really do not require a conductor.
No,
they just propagate, in nothing. And it's intuitively, it's hard to understand, but that's the way the world works.
Let's go to Paul, first-time caller in Florida. Hey, Paul, good morning.
Yeah, great to speak with you, George and Dr. Blank. First of all, I'd like to heartily concur with Dr. Blank's personal preference for having everything in his house wired. I found that once I stopped using wireless things and went to everything wired, I didn't have headaches anymore. Also an observation, a couple of years ago they put smart meters in all the homes in my neighborhood, and my ears started ringing. So I did some research and discovered that was one of the indicators of microwave sickness. The smart meters emit microwaves. They're all radio frequency transmitters. So the average neighborhood now is inundated with cell phone RF and microwave RF, and so some people have routers in their house, and of course cell phones. So the biggest source of exposure to the average person now is microwaves. So I purchased a digital RF frequency analyzer and started finding all the hot spots, and I started using aluminum window screen as expedient shielding to block the RF that was coming from outside the house, and that worked pretty well. The observation is that Dr. Blank remarked it was particularly important to make sure that you reduced your exposure during your sleep time, because that's when the body does most of its repair work. Now, I can hardly concur with that, because once I shielded my bedroom and put the aluminum screen over my bed also, so that I had an improvised Faraday cage, my symptoms totally went away.
Huge
and using
difference.
The RF meter, I was able to verify that I was getting less than 1/10 of a microwatt per square meter. And okay, one last observation: the booklet that comes with most of the RF meters defines 1 microwatt per square meter as the threshold for significant cellular damage. Would you concur with that, Dr. Blank?
I believe so, but I have to look at this every time to remember all these things. They keep on changing. Every country has a slightly different value, and they vary between, at least the ELF part, they vary between states, so that I believe you're right. But the fact is that the people do not generally buy these electric meters. That's the way to really tell what you've got. But there's a rather inexpensive way that you can get a pretty good idea of what's going on, certainly to find a hot spot. And that is to take one of these portable AM radios,
mm-hmm.
and with that you can carry around with you, and you just tune it out to the end of the dial. Either it's 550, let's say, kilocycles, or 1600 kilocycles, well, 1650.
Wherever there's no station, I guess, right?
When there's no transmission going on. In other words, nobody's filling that frequency and sending something out. So all you get is static, and you put the volume all the way up, and then you go around with that, with the antenna, point the antenna to different places, and you'll see the level of the static will change. And when it goes up, that means there's more radio frequency waves coming out. Now, this is not a meter that's going to tell you specifically what you're getting, but it's a very good one for locating sources. So if you feel you're getting RF kind of radiation, you can just carry this thing around with you, and you see, you can take one. I mean, I did it the other day with my computer screen, and you can see you got the level of static, and then as you approach the screen, and you find out that suddenly the volume of the static goes up, that tells you that there's been an increase. Now, I have a real meter, and I made a measurement and found what the number was and saw that what the difference was. And so it's good enough qualitatively. So many people, when they see the prices on these meters, it's not like a small car, but it's getting pretty close to a good used car. And the thing is that you can, you can get by with some of these innovative kinds of cheaper devices will give you just enough information to tell you whether you're getting a hot spot, and you can then shield yourself from it, keep your distance from it.
Martin, is there any medical practitioner out there who specializes in this kind of practice or medicine?
Well, the ones that I know are generally in the research part, but the I don't really know what they can do in terms of actually active intervention to get in and do something. If you've got this sort of sickness, if you want to call it that way, I don't know what they prescribe for or what they can do. I mean, certainly when you've got the end results, if somebody gets a cancer, then of course you do the standard cancer treatment. But what do you do to when somebody has symptoms? You try and do things that might, let's say, help them sleep, for example. Or I guess you probably get more help from an electrical engineer who's trained in this. And there are some people who specialize in this. And they will come to your house or place of work, and they can make measurements and point out what things should be eliminated, what things should be, you know, how you can place things. Maybe you can even place your desk, your chair, in such a way that minimize the exposure. The simple answer to your question is I don't know of any physicians who specialize in this, but there are health people who will deal with things like diet and sleep and that kind of thing that could help. And, of course, there are these odd kinds of things like acupuncture, for example, that is non-scientific by Western standards, but many people say, you know, they're helped by it. Well, who knows? Maybe it's psychological, maybe it's not. But many people are drawn to that because they can find very little satisfaction in some of the standard treatments. Many, you know, you go to many doctors. The problem today is that they don't feel they've done medicine until they give you a prescription.
Yeah.
And so they give you a drug. There's a drug for this and a drug for that. Back in the good old days, doctors would try and figure out they didn't have all these drugs around. And so they try and figure out what was the cause and try and play with that and see if they can moderate it. And the other thing is that the doctors spent a lot more time with their patients and they knew their patients. Now it's kind of, you know, hello, goodbye, you know, that kind of thing. Really, in many cases, you have to know how a person is living, what to figure out what kinds of exposure they're getting.
Yeah, that's so important. Let's go to Keith in North Dakota now. Hi, Keith. Thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, George. Good evening, Dr. Blank. I have a question and a comment.
Sure.
First of all, the question, and I'd like to take it off the air, is I'd like to know if you are aware of how many frequencies we're hit now approximately. Is it between 100,000 and 300,000 per hour? And also I would like to ask if you've heard of the work of Dr. Phyllis Light. There's a product called a rejuvenizer device that completely neutralizes the damaging effects of electromagnetic fog and pollution and the frequency damage. And I've actually had one and used them for the house for like 24 years now. I've been very, very aware of this for a long time.
Good for you.
And when I go various places that don't have a protective shield, if you will, it's so apparent. It's like day and night, the earth and the moon or something like that. I'll take my answer about the frequencies per hour offline. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Yeah.
How often are we being bombarded and how much?
Well, all I can say is I don't have an exact answer, but you can imagine all the things that are going on. I mean,
you
look on the electromagnetic spectrum and you see every slot now in the non-ionizing range is pretty much allocated to some kind of device. I mean, if you look even in the low micro radio frequency, you look at devices that the way they divide it up in towns. I mean, this is for the police communication. This is for emergency ambulance. This is for, I don't know, you know, every frequency band is allocated, and they're all active in different ways and at different times. It's hard to tell what kind of exposure people are getting. Although you know that The major stuff that one is getting is the stuff that's coming from the cell towers, the ones that are doing all this transmission, and they are the ones that are increasing in their frequency. I mean, in their the number that you're being exposed to. There was a study recently done down in Brazil, where they found that in the past, I think it was 5 to 10 years, somewhere in there, there'd been an order of magnitude, a tenfold change in the energy that one was exposed to as a result of the increase in the use of cell phones. So that you can imagine that this is on top of all the other stuff that's there, the electric power that's being used, the radio transmissions that are being used, and then all these other things that are being used by different agencies like the police and fire department. And so you've got to just understand that we are getting, we're getting zapped basically 24 hours a day, and year after year, it's increasing.
That we will take the toll eventually for that, Martin.
Yep. We're paying daily.
You got to get your book in front of people in Congress. Can you do that?
Well, I'm doing my part. I'm trying to get people to understand it, to read. I wrote the book. I've written many scientific papers, so I know how to write science and get it transmitted. This was an attempt to do a kind of not a popular one, but a kind of a way to let people know what the science is and what happened in the field, so that they can understand the magnitude of the change and the fact that it's a big fight, because there are a lot of people who don't want this changed. They want this to continue growing. And this is symptomatic. I think this is a very important problem, but it's only one of the problems. The other problems that we see right now with the, with the environmental change, with the quality of food and oil and the air and water quality, I mean, it's just...
It's everywhere, Martin. We're being bombarded from everything. Good luck. Well done. Overpowered. I'll be back in a moment. We're going to talk about a United Nations campaign to just stop pollution, because they think that's causing climate change. We'll be back.